Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. This is the moment we've all been waiting for. It's the 10 best movies of 2019. Hi, David. The floor is yours.
Hi, Joe. How you doing this week, by the way? Happy New Year.
No, how you doing this year? So far, yeah. It's short enough that I won't complain.
Okay, fair enough. Well, yeah, let's pause for a moment and think how all throughout the movie-making world, from Hollywood to the other side of the globe, everyone is pausing their activities to wait and find out what in the world I think were the best achievements of 2019. But that aside, I really doubt if anyone is waiting with bated breath.
I'm waiting.
I will, except you, and believe me, I appreciate
and our
that.
Listeners are waiting.
Yeah. Okay, and I'm taking too long to introduce this. So anyway, here we go. And some of these movies like are not sort of playing everywhere. And in my earlier years as a movie critic, I would be a little self-conscious about that and think, here I'm saying this is a great film and, you know, people can't run off to their local movie theater and see some of these. But, you know, nowadays with the wonders of streaming, video and DVDs and Blu-rays and things like that, things really are available, and I really do recommend seeking these out if you haven't already seen them or if you're interested in them. So, okay, let's start with number 10, and you know, a movie that did finally make its way onto my list, even though I have mixed feelings about it, is The Irishman by Martin Scorsese. That's my 10th, that's number 10 on my list, and we'll be working our way up to number 1. It's a long movie. I've seen it more than once. It's about 3.5 hour long movie. I do not think it ranks with Martin Scorsese's greatest achievements. I do think that he has been for many years the greatest living American filmmaker and one of the greatest living filmmakers anywhere. This is not one of his greatest achievements, but it just has such scope and such sweep, and it has such a sort of sense of melancholy to it. It really is kind of an end-of-life movie by a filmmaker who is getting up there. He's even older than I am, that I just decided it really does belong on the list, if only for the performances by people like Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci, who have collaborated with Scorsese for so many years. So The Irishman is number 10. Number 9 on my list is a documentary. It is American Dharma by Errol Morris, a movie which had terrible trouble getting distribution, but it finally is in distribution. I saw it at a movie theater just the other day. And Errol Morris is one of the great American documentary makers with a special gift for making movies about public affairs issues, political issues, and so forth. And American Dharma is his feature-length interview with Stephen K. Bannon, former top advisor to Donald Trump, and a, in my mind, a very nefarious figure who bodes no good in the world. He is now traveling about the world trying to foment populist uprisings in other places, having facilitated the one that Donald Trump has been leading in the United States. I think he's kind of a very dodgy character. I don't like what he stands for. I don't like what he does. Neither, it appears, does Errol Morris, but Errol, to his great credit, gives Bannon a whole feature-length interview to expound his point of view on things and to undergo some fairly tough questioning by the filmmaker himself. I think it's a fascinating movie and a movie that people interested in American politics and world politics really ought to look at. It has a lot to teach about the mindsets behind what is currently called a populism in the current day and age. The next film is The Report, which is an unusual movie in a lot of ways, written and directed by Scott Z. Burns, another filmmaker who has a lot of credentials in the world of a kind of political and public affairs filmmaking. And here we have Adam Driver in what I consider his best performance of the year, better than his performance in Marriage Story. Adam Driver plays a very young guy who goes to work in the United States Senate. His name is Daniel J. Jones, and he goes to work for the Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is brilliantly brilliantly played by Annette Bening, a marvelous performance. And he is meant to lead an inquiry into the detention and interrogation program, the so-called enhanced interrogation after 9/11 that the CIA ran. And he just uncovers a whole lot of absolutely shocking secrets that have been held decides that these must be disclosed. And then he runs into all kinds of trouble getting his report out there into the public eye. A very, very interesting and tension-filled movie about real-life drama, real-life politics, real-life government intrigue. And it returns our attention to something which we're not thinking enough about anymore, I think, which is the many abuses conducted by the United States government in the wake of 9/11. Number seven is a movie which I also took a while before I put it onto my list, but I finally decided that I would. And it ended up being in number seven, which is not really a bad spot to be in, which is Uncut Gems, which is this movie with an absolutely amazing performance by Adam Sandler, who once upon a time we all thought of as just sort of a limited comedy star, but he turns out to have a whole lot of talents. This is a very high-energy movie by the high-energy movie team of Josh Safdie and Benny Safdie, who co-wrote it and directed it. And Adam Sandler plays a jewelry dealer in the Diamond District of New York who comes upon a very, very valuable opal, which then falls into the hands of a basketball player, a pro basketball player, fascinatingly playing himself, who feels that he will have his mojo if he just has this opal in his possession. And this leads to a whole lot of sort of dueling between the jewelry dealer, the basketball player, and the jewelry dealer's various enemies, guys who owes a lot of money to. And this is one of those people who just can't seem to ever just pay his debts. He's always got to take the money he owes to this person to place a high stakes bet so that he can get even more money to pay another, et cetera, et cetera. High energy movie, full of tension, full of wit and humor, and very, very hard-hitting. And I had a good time watching Uncut Gems. It is an uncut gem of a movie, but it's brilliantly shot, brilliantly edited, and Adam Sandler gives what may be the performance of his lifetime. Moving up to number six on the list, getting almost halfway there, is Parasite. Now, this is a movie which I hesitated to put on my list a little bit because it's just getting awards everywhere. Everybody's giving it awards. But it really is a good movie. It's a South Korean movie from the great filmmaker Bong Joon-ho, whose work I don't always go for. But this is a movie about a family who want to better themselves in very nefarious and dishonest ways. And one of them gets a job working for somebody with a lot of money and then manages to get another family member in there. And before you know it, there's a whole bunch of family members in there. And they're all sort of parasiting off of this wealthy person and all kinds of complications ensue. It's a comedy. It's a drama. It has some very bizarre scenes in it. But I just found it generally compelling and watchable and had a good time seeing it. It's getting all the awards. I don't think it deserves all the awards, but I think it does deserve to be number six on my list of the year's 10 best movies. Number five is a movie I saw pretty late in the game, 1917. This is a war movie directed by Sam Mendes and shot by Roger Deakins, one of the great cinematographers anyway. And here he pulls off an astonishing stunt. 1917 is a movie that is more than 2 hours long, and it all appears to be shot in one continuous take, one continuous shot lasting for all that time. Now, it isn't really that. There's times when the screen goes dark or when the smoke from the battlefield is obscuring things and they sneak in a little cut there. But normally, of course, movies are edited from one shot to another constantly. And in the modern age, in the age of Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, movies are cut faster than ever. The average length of a shot in movies has just gotten shorter and shorter as movies are cut more and more rapidly. So here we have one of the rare films that goes in the opposite direction, a whole movie which appears to be in one long unbroken take. Now, interestingly, the subject matter of the movie ideally suits that. It's about two young soldiers in World War I who are sent off on a mission. They must get a message across. And if they don't carry this message from point A to point B, an enormous amount of men will be killed. And one of whom is the brother of one of the young men who goes on this mission to deliver this message. It is a suspense movie. It is full of uncertainty about just what will happen when they go around the next bend or walk around the next trench or do this or that. And the movie just builds that suspense just enormously by having it all shot in this one seemingly unbroken take. I found it a very suspenseful suspenseful movie. I found it a very watchable movie, and it's a beautifully edited movie, but above all, astoundingly well shot by the great Roger Deakins, who is great even when he makes more conventional movies, and he's super great here. The next movie is one that people might have trouble finding, but it's worth seeking out, Long Day's Journey into Night. This is not the American play. This is actually a Chinese-French co-production by a very fine Chinese filmmaker named Gan Bi. It is a movie about, it's a very mysterious movie, and it's about a man who goes back to the town that he came from, the little town, because he is thinking about a woman who he knew there many years ago, and then he appears to find that woman, but is it the same woman? Is it a different woman? If that sounds mysterious and almost sort of dreamlike, the whole movie is mysterious and sort of dreamlike. And the most unusual thing about it is that it's about 2.5 hours long, and the last hour is in 3D. So long into the movie, one of the characters puts on 3D glasses, and then we, if we are lucky enough to be watching this, as I did, in a movie with 3D, in a movie theater with 3D facilities, you put on your own 3D glasses, and the movie then segues into 3D, and the last hour is another one of these long, 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 unbroken shots. And in this case, it's in 3D. It's truly immersive. Again, it's a mysterious story. It's a dreamlike story. I found it a very inventive story and just a fascinating experience. So coming back a little bit closer to normal, number three, now this is a movie which has not been getting all kinds of awards, so I'm very glad to be calling a little extra attention to it because it's a terrific movie, a film called The Mustang. Directed by Laura de Clermont-Tonnerre, and it is very much an American movie, and it stars Matthias Schoenaerts in what I think is one of the absolutely finest performances of the year. He plays a prisoner who is, I guess you could say, fortunate enough to be in a prison where they have a rehabilitation program where prisoners get to care for and train and be very much partnered with wild horses. Wild Mustangs. That's where the title of the movie comes from. And so we end the guy who runs this program is an old grizzled guy played by Bruce Dern in one of the many good performances that he's been giving lately. I found The Mustang to be a beautiful movie about animals, a beautiful movie about the relationship between humans and animals, a terrific prison movie. There's a genre that has been around for many, many decades, and this is an excellent example of it. But mainly, I just found it a beautifully made movie and an astonishingly well-acted movie by Matthias Schoenaerts. He really is a great, great actor who doesn't get all the recognition that he really deserves. So if you want to see him do sensational work, see Bruce Dern do great work, The Mustang is really worth seeking out. I just found it a marvelous movie. And if you like horses, then you can add a whole lot of stars to that. The second best movie of 2019, in my opinion, was a movie by, or is, because it's still around, a movie by Jean-Luc Godard, the very, very great Swiss-French filmmaker, the last surviving member of the original French New Wave, who revolutionized world cinema back mostly in the 1960s. All the others have died since then, François Truffaut, Claude Chabrol, all the others, but Godard is still around, very, very old man now, and still making movies. And the Image Book is absolutely typical of most of Godard's career, and certainly of the later part of his career. It is an incredibly difficult film to figure out. What's going on here? Most of it is clips from other movies, all sort of layered and collaged and montaged and coming over and under one another and gliding past one another. That's what it is, a huge kaleidoscopic mélange of clips from a trillion different movies of forming just an astonishing audiovisual experience. Exactly what it all means. The people who study Godard, and by the way, I've done two books on Godard, one I wrote and one I edited. And for me, this movie is really mysterious. I mean, a whole lot of the time just saying, what is going on here? But in a way, that matters a whole lot less than just the magnificent audiovisual experience. The sights and the sounds are just dazzling, and they just keep coming for the movie's running time. And here we have a movie which is under an hour and a half long, so it's not a killer. And I just found it an astounding experience by one of the world's great screen artists who is still at work still on the job, and I support him all the way. He's an astounding talent, a difficult one, but a unique one. Finally, the best movie of 2019, A Hidden Life, by the very great Terrence Malick. Not all of his movies are great, but he is a filmmaker who was, he was a philosopher before he turned to film many years ago. He has a tremendous theological impulse. Like most of his films, A Hidden Life has a very powerful spiritual dimension. It's about a man who is conscripted to fight in the Nazi army and refuses to do it. He is a conscientious objector in a situation that was not very tolerant of those. The movie's flaw is also its virtue. Its great flaw is that the Nazis keep wanting to talk with this guy and talk him out of being a conscientious objector. In real life, I think they just would have shot him in the head. But that is also the movie's virtue, because there are these fascinating philosophical, theological discussions of what it means to have a conscience, what it means to refuse to kill your fellow human beings, and that is really what the movie is all about. It is also, like most Malick's movies, an astonishingly beautiful visual experience, truly cinematic, full of gorgeous sights, compelling sounds, and a magnificent camera style that just sort of swoops, glides, and travels across the countryside. I found it a wonderful movie, and I could not recommend it more highly. A Hidden Life, the best movie of 2019. And that is my very enthusiastic story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, David Sterrett's 10 best movies of 2019.